again, this is the old Good Morning Man, Kermit Edney, with program number 107 in a series of 260 broadcasts dealing with the happenings and the people who made things happen over the past 50 years, the years since 1946. With the same format as the great Frank Fitzsimmons series, we call it merely Where Fitz Left Off. And today we'll talk about the challenge given to me by Bruce Drysdale and the outcome of that challenge. As I mentioned yesterday, when Mr. Bruce Drysdale asked me, maybe this was 1963, to visit with him at his office, which back then was on the second floor of the Times News building, he raised the question, had I heard the rumor that the Times News was about to be sold to an Atlanta syndicate? When I answered I had not, he said to me, and I'm trying to quote from memory now, Kermit, I have observed your operation of the radio station, and I'm very happy to see that the ownership has remained in local hands. Mr. Drysdale continued, I am convinced that it would be in the best interest of this community if the local paper remained in local hands. Broadcasting is somewhat a related business to newspapers, and I'd appreciate it if you could feel somebody out on whether or not the Times News could be purchased by a local group. Mr. Drysdale quickly emphasized he personally was not interested in owning the paper, nor did he have any desire to create a company that would dictate policy to the management employed. He said, and again I'm trying to quote, I just feel that if future management of the local paper knew they had to answer to local stockholders, they would be more likely to listen to the people and would be more responsive to the best interests of this community. I then asked Mr. Drysdale, suppose I get a responsive offer, how will the money be raised? He smiled. Well, let's just say that question is a bit premature, but I dare say that we have friends in this community that would be happy to participate. So the next day I called Jimmy Fain and asked if we could get together for a cup of coffee, and he quickly agreed. In the beginning of the conversation, I tried probing for information that he might be willing to share about any possible sale. As he kept sidestepping the issue, I began to feel that he perhaps didn't trust me, when suddenly he volunteered something to the effect that maybe the Fains might be the last to know. Observing my extended quizzical look, he finally related to me the sequence of events that led to Mike Ogle gaining a majority interest and the Fains being relegated to a minority. He quickly added, however, that the Fain family might not be able to be the dominant factor in the future of the paper, but with their large minority interest, without Fain concurrence in an outright sale, it would be very difficult for would-be buyers. He added, certainly if a buyer wanted to buy out Mike, he would also have to have a concurrence on the part of the Fain family. I only told him that I was representing a group of local investors who wanted to guarantee a perpetuation of local ownership, and though I held no sway over the proposed group, I had been assured that they had no desire to dictate to management in any way. I could tell that thought did interest him, and he suggested I talk to Mike Ogle. So then I made an appointment with Mr. Ogle in his office. Most everybody who remembers Mike Ogle will recall that it was normal for him to have a rather dour look on his face at almost all times. And as I explained the purpose on my being there, emphasizing that nobody wanted to change management or policy in any way, it simply was the desire of these community investors to ensure local ownership of the paper in perpetuity. Throughout my explanation, the expression never changed. And when I had finished, we sat in silence for perhaps a minute. And Mike then responded in measured words, and I'll try to quote from memory. My life has been spent in this newspaper. I consider it not only my privilege, but my responsibility to find my own successor, who will come to this community and dedicate his life to this paper as I have. I have no interest in discussing a change of ownership with any local group or person. I will make my move when I have found the right person, and it is the right time. I thanked him for hearing my presentation and wished him well. When I reported the outcome of these two meetings to Mr. Drysdale, he gave again that little trace of a smile and said, Kermit, there are circumstances which occur in life over which we have no control, and I'm afraid that what you're telling me is that we have such a situation in this matter, and we'll drop any further pursuit of any kind. Mike Ogle did make his move September 1, 1964, when he committed control to Lawson Braswell, who became vice president and general manager. Mr. Drysdale never knew he died that year. Another memory of this seventh child, lucky enough to be born here, the good sense never to leave, and with a job he's loved all of his life. Sursum corda as we approach the next 50 years.